Welcome to Women in Histology, a five-part series brought to you by the National Society for Histotechnology. In this episode, Women in Negotiations, three NSH members sat down to talk about this tricky skill and the challenges it can present. Your host for this episode is Anastasia Penrod, Histology Supervisor for Quest Diagnostics in St. Louis, Missouri. Her first interview is with Jenny Bull. Jenny is the Director of Laboratory Operations with Northwest Pathology, where she oversees a large staff at multiple sites. She shared how she approaches negotiating with vendors and staff and the unique challenges both scenarios can present. She also gave her top three tips for entering into any negotiation. For the second interview, Anastasia spoke with Tracy DeGeer, who faces unique cultural and language challenges. This is because of her role as Discovery Training Manager for Roche Molecular Systems, where she develops training programs at Roche training sites worldwide. In their talk, Tracy shared how she overcomes these barriers to effectively communicate expectations and outcomes. Her tips not only work well in the international community, but also translate well into the home lab. On behalf of the NSH, thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Anastasia Penrod, Histology Supervisor at Quest Diagnostics in St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm with Jenny Bull, the 2017 NSH Convention Chair. She's also the Director of Laboratory Operations at Northwest Pathology in Washington. So we're going to talk about negotiation. Jenny, can you tell me, in your role as the Director of Laboratory Operations, what things do you negotiate, and how often are you negotiating?
Every day. we negotiate employment. People interviewing, applying for jobs. We negotiate job positions within the company. It's not unoften to have staff come and pop down in my office and say, where do you see me in 3 years, or what opportunities are there for me to grow? Obviously, client contracts and vendor contracts, salary negotiations. It seems like every day brings some sort of negotiation.
What types of things do you negotiate with the vendors?
Well, initially, with any vendor coming in, we'll negotiate a contract for, say, equipment. If you're looking for a staining platform, IHC, H&E, special stains, I'll reach out to several vendors and compare products and get down to the point where we're negotiating pros and cons, benefits to the lab, and then price. And once we've got a contract signed with the vendor and we've implemented equipment, there's always maintenance as far as pricing for reagents, pricing for consumables, the annual increases they all like to pass our way, right down to, I'm right in the middle of negotiating right now a price review on a contract, so I still have 3 years left in a contract, but our volumes have increased significantly, so we're doing a contract review to look at if what we agreed on a couple years ago is still relevant or if there's opportunity for savings.
So with that contract, you have to prepare yourself. So what do you do in this situation to prepare yourself to what you need to know to get into that negotiation?
I typically will start by reading my contract that I currently have. I think that you can kind of go in ignorant and blind sometimes, and if you don't know what you're currently committed to. Next step is I usually will do a long, hard look at our internal operations and see, you know, what is our volumes, what's changed since we originally agreed. I will forecast what do I foresee changing in the next year and then further out to the extension of, you know, the end of our contract. I educate myself. I what's my current status? What is my forecasted status? What commitments can I reasonably maintain? I think that if you're going to have a good relationship with your vendors and your contracts need to work both ways. So there's always a win-win. That's how business works. And so I have to be realistic, meaning if I say my volume is going to be 100 and I commit to that, I want to make sure that I'm at 100 or over. I don't want to come in at 50 and either cost more money to my company for not meeting contract obligations or to jeopardize my relationship with that vendor.
And so you're doing this as a renegotiation, but the same tactic applies if you're going to do a new negotiation for a new item. Let's say, you know, everybody buys a car, so you'd want to do the same thing with the car. You want to do the education and the research, correct?
Absolutely. I think that the more prepared you are, I always go in with a plan B. So typically if I'm going to go out and look at, say, a new car or a new piece of equipment for the lab or a new test, it's not a decision made solely by me or in a silo. It usually involves staff that'll be working with equipment and performing the testing. But ultimately, I'm going to take it back to my owner group, and I want to be able to take them back options. I want to be able to take them back, I don't know if I want to say proof, but evidence that I have done my due diligence. That promotes trust and their confidence in me, that I'm not just saying, oh, I had a great lunch with this one vendor and, you know, they promised me the moon, so I'm going to come promise it to you. I think you go in and you really research. You understand what your needs are. You understand how they can be met. And you look at multiple options. You know, sometimes because of budgetary reasons, cost restrictions, otherwise for operation, space in your lab, there's a lot of things that sometimes you can't always go with your number one choice. So you really need to know what your number two and number three choices are.
And have you had the situation, you know, with that, you're getting that new piece of equipment and you go to try it and you've done this great negotiation and you get at that phase of the demoing, and which in my mind is very important because that's where you get the inclusion of the staff and everybody who's actually going to use it, and then no one likes it.
You know, it's I'm laughing because I'm dealing with that right now. And I think it's going to work out, but we're actually dealing with that with some equipment right now in our lab where we kind of looked at it on paper and everything looked really good. And so we, you know, let's go for this. Let's do it. And I'm usually try to be very respectful of our vendor time too. It costs a lot of money to facilitate a demo. So I won't typically bring demos in unless I feel pretty solid that I'm on the right path, or that if it performs as expected that we would follow through with a PO or some type of agreement. So we actually did that. We've got equipment in our lab and we can't get the staining where we wanted to, and we're close now, but we've spent a good 4 months working with this vendor and their tech support, and they're probably everybody within their company at this point is motivated to get this working. And it's a little nerve-wracking because my reasons for wanting to bring this particular piece of equipment in were for workflow considerations, that I knew outside of the staining quality that it had a lot of benefits to bring to our lab. But again, we're about 4 months in and just now starting to train staff and get buy-in, which is a frustrating process when nothing's worked out right to date. But I think you have to always be willing to, you know, give it the best shot. And if it doesn't work out, that it doesn't. And as long as your expectations are clear going in, it's easier to back out of those obligations if the expectations aren't met. So the one thing that we did set going into this was very clear expectations that if we can't achieve our goals in the end, that it's not going to stay. And that's a tough one for everybody. But.
And so would you suggest someone going into this kind of negotiation, you know, with equipment especially, that here are the goals that you're outlining what you expect and finding out what their expectations are and making sure that there's some middle ground?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that ultimately you bring equipment into your lab, you want it to work, but you kind of have to know that there's an opportunity that it won't. And how are you going to navigate that conversation to a way that you can still maintain a relationship and potentially work with that vendor down the road? And so having clear expectations, knowing what your anticipated outcomes are, it's easier to have those conversations on the back end if those aren't met because they've been agreed upon. So that probably my biggest recommendation when bringing in equipment or doing demos.
Have you had any conflicts within in negotiation?
Absolutely. I've negotiated with staff, and sometimes they don't like what you have to hear. I always appreciate when an employee can come and sit down and articulate to me their goals, where they hope to be, and what they find their value to be. It instigates great conversation, but just because somebody comes and sits down and tells me what they want doesn't always mean I have the ability to meet their needs. So I definitely had conflict in those types of conversations.
Do you find it's more difficult to negotiate with staff and employees, people that you know on a daily basis, rather than with vendors?
Absolutely. I think the reason for that is that I'm very vested in my staff. Most of my staff I've hired, I've worked with to grow, I am just as dedicated to their success as they are. So it's kind of like parenting. You always want to make things easy and pave that road, but the reality doesn't always match that. They're more challenging conversations for me, I find, and they take up a lot more of my personal time and thought to how best approach so that it's a good outcome for everybody and we can move forward on the same page.
So would you say you have a separate style of negotiation for your vendors as with your staff? You have two separate styles of negotiation.
Yes and no. I think at the core, when I'm negotiating anything, I always try to be honest and transparent and I guess not play games, for lack of a better term. Most, if you talk to any of my staff, will tell you that I'm fairly direct, and that can be received a lot of different ways by different people. But I think that you have to go into everything with good intent, with transparency, and I always try to, one, understand with myself where I'm coming from, and two, try to be able to explain that to whoever I'm negotiating with. I'm a little more personally vested with staff, so I might have a softer approach than I do with a vendor, but again, I think there's got to be mutual respect in both types of negotiations.
So do you feel that negotiation is something you are naturally good at, or is this difficult and you have to work up to it?
That is a good question. It's gotten easier. I've been in with this company for 17 years, so I grew up in the lab, and I grew into a supervisory position. I grew into a manager position coming off the bench, and then ultimately into a lab director. So I oversee over 40 people in all of our lab operations, from front office to courier to our molecular department. So I've got a pretty vast group of people under me. And coming off the bench and working into more of a management role, negotiations were not easy, and the staff conversations were extremely difficult for me. But I think that the more experience I've had, the more diverse types of things I've had to negotiate, it comes a lot more naturally now, and I actually kind of look forward to it these days, but it definitely did not come easy.
And I'm going to agree with you on that, because coming from my side, I feel that it is difficult to negotiate, especially for yourself. If it's something personal, like you're going in a job interview and you're negotiating your salary or any of the benefits, it's really hard to stand up and say what you want for yourself. But I think it's really easier when you're going in for something else for someone else.
I completely agree. And if I were to say I had one really weak area still professionally, it is self-advocating. I will stand behind any of my staff, and they know it. I will stand behind vendors. But I have a really hard time articulating my value sometimes. So it's kind of one of those things where you can write everybody else's evaluation, but it'd sure be nice if somebody wrote yours.
Right. The self-eval, I find, is hard for anyone. But then negotiating, you know, this is what I'm good at, and then tooting your own horn, like we like to say, I find is difficult for everyone.
I keep lists. I'm very fact-based. Probably like a lot of us are scientific-minded, and I keep lists. So I have a to-do list that I work off of, and once a week I scan it in and I date it, and I put it in a file. So it's hard to, especially when you're managing staff or in an area of responsibility, it's hard to go back a year later or 6 months later and articulate what you've been doing. You know you're busy. You had successes. You know you've had failures, but it's hard to look at them. So sometimes the only way I can do it is to wrap my head around the facts and go back and look at my list. Okay, well, this is what I did.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I do the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's those scientific brains and type A personalities that run through our profession.
I believe so. I guess we'll end all this with the top three tips that you can give to somebody who's entering into negotiation.
Oh, gosh, be prepared. You know your material, know what your goals are. Always be professional, because anytime you're negotiating, inevitably you're going to have to tell somebody something they don't want to hear, and there's a good likelihood you're going to hear something you don't want to hear. And always resign yourself to being okay with the outcome. You can always re-enter a negotiation. You can always get additional information and renegotiate something. You know, how you hold those conversations and accept the outcomes can drive what the next conversation looks like. So is that three?
I think that's at least three, yeah. This is Anastasia Penrod, NSH member and histology supervisor at Quest Diagnostics in St. Louis, Missouri, and I am with Tracy DeGeer. She's their NSH Education and CEU chair. She also works as the global training manager for Discovery Products at Ventana Medical Systems, and we're going to talk about negotiations. In your current role, what types of things do you negotiate, and how often do you negotiate them?
So my role is a little bit unusual, being an education manager. I actually work with sales teams, but I also work with a lot of different educators all over the world. So in my role, I actually work with 5 different training centers worldwide. So I spend a lot of time negotiating different types of training material with the global site because the needs of the people that we educate are different worldwide. And you also have to take into account different language barriers because we have training sites that are in China. I have a training site that's in Japan. I have a training site that's in England. I have a training site that's in Milan, Germany. And then we have the North American training site. And the North American training site is actually the hub for education. So we produce all of the material, but just because we produce it doesn't necessarily mean it's something that's going to be of benefit to, say, a site that's in China. And so when I go to actually transfer it to somewhere like China, I have to negotiate with them what makes the most sense for me to send them for use. And then what's going to be easiest to translate language-wise. So that's probably one of my biggest types of negotiation. And then I spend a lot of time negotiating with groups like marketing in North America and marketing in Asia as to what types of training materials they need for local sales teams. We have to make sure that we meet needs for each specific area. And when you're supporting somewhere in the neighborhood of 31 countries, how does that look and what's different from country to country?
So that sounds pretty challenging to be able to negotiate what your customer needs. You know, you're trying to give them this product because that's meeting their needs and means what you're trying to accomplish. But then you're pulled from another direction on another side trying to meet their needs. How do you balance that between the two groups?
Lots of hours. So it's kind of an interesting thing. We have managers for each marketing segment. So we have managers that oversee global segments. There's an Asia Pacific manager. There's a European manager. There's a Latin American manager. And there's a North American manager. So we meet with them on a regular basis.
And do you have a set of expectations for both of them? Are they different? Are they the same? I mean, do you negotiate the same style with each group?
No, you really don't. So North America is pretty easy to negotiate with because their expectation is usually the same as what, say, my expectation would be just because from a country standpoint. But if I'm talking to someone in Japan or someone in China, their expectation is going to be completely different because the way they educate is different. And so usually their expectation is that you're going to come and physically educate them rather than just having a conference call with them. So usually twice a year I end up going to Asia simply to sit down with them and have educational conversations because they don't learn very well over the web. And so you have to physically sit and do hands-on learning.
To know those education system differences, it seems like you have to have learned that. Did you learn that on the job? Is that something that you were taught?
I actually learned it on the job. It's very interesting. Some of it I learned on the fly, actually having close to 14 years in this role. Others of it, they actually have classes that we can go through on how to communicate with groups from other countries. So what are the cultural differences in dealing with people from Japan, dealing with people from China, dealing with groups from the European Union? How do you interface with teams from Latin America differently than you would interface with a team from the United States? So that you're able to have those crucial conversations a little bit differently and not actually offend anybody, but also get the most out of the conversation.
So all this on-the-job training, to me, sounds that you had to learn it as you go. Do you feel that it came natural to you, or is it relatively difficult to pick up that skill?
It actually is easier than you think. If you like to just talk to people, then it's pretty easy to pick up those types of skills, because the more you enjoy just having conversations with people, the easier that type of negotiation skill develops.
Have you decided there's a certain style that you stick with negotiating?
Actually, there really is. I ask a lot of questions when I'm negotiating in the beginning, just to get information that I need, and it helps me open the conversation. When I'm asking those questions, I ask a lot of open-ended questions so that I can encourage them to tell me what it is their expectations are and what it is they need the most. That way, when I sit down and make a plan for them from an educational standpoint, I can actually make a plan that suits their needs best, and then I go back and present the plan to them and ask them for clarification on whether or not I've covered everything that they're looking for.
Because you're having these negotiations across continents and across different cultures, and I know there's a lot of barriers and a lot of learnings and education that goes with training someone, do you find that you've come up with some conflicts that were easier to resolve than others, or possibly give us examples of some of the negotiation conflicts that you've encountered?
Probably some of the hardest things to, hardest barriers to get through. Language is one of the hardest, because a lot of the countries that we negotiate in, that I spend educationally negotiating in, I spend a lot of time in Asia, and there are lots of places in Asia where English is not a first language or English is not spoken at all. And so you work through interpreters. So you're not sure that what you're saying is being interpreted correctly. That makes the negotiation a little bit harder, and also make not knowing whether what you're saying is being interpreted quite the way that you'd like it to be interpreted. So that when you go to teach something, sometimes it's not stressed quite the way you need it to be stressed. And so you run into conflict there, and so you're not sure whether or not it's being stressed quite the way that you'd like it to be stressed. So that can sometimes cause conflict. I taught a lab in China, and all we were teaching was best practices for histology, so basic cutting, drying, staining, fixation, things like that. And there was some misconception about the fact that if you dry slides a certain way, if you handle slides a certain way, that the quality of your staining actually improves. Whether you're doing a manual stain or an automated stain, it just improves overall. And that actually created a lot of consternation with the lab itself, because their answer to that is, well, we've always done it this way. And when you go back and you discuss with the pathologist, it turns out some of the artifactual staining and those things that they were seeing, they had always seen it that way. And those were the corrections that we were trying to talk them through. But you get a lot of pushback from the technicians, and some of that was they weren't getting a correct interpretation of why we wanted them to change. And so change management is really hard to manage in those kinds of scenarios.
I think you find that with any laboratory you go into, whether, you know, it's a different country with a different language, you get that same, we've always done it this way. And that is truly one of my favorite lines. And as being a new tech in a lab or a new supervisor, and my question is, why? Why do you always do it? And I think that also brings up some good conflict and some negotiation of, well, we do it this way because, and then I've always thought, if you can't explain to me why you're doing it, then maybe we need to change it or come up with a reason.
Yeah, it really is. But when you're working through an interpreter to get those questions and answers back and forth, you're not sure that you're getting the question you want
right
presented to the person the way that you want it, and you're not sure you're getting their full answer back the way that they would like it presented to you, and that creates a whole separate barrier in there. And then a lot of times as you're having those explanations, I resort to drawing pictures with them a lot of times. It's like, okay, so draw me a picture of why you think you have to do it this way. And sometimes they'll draw you a picture and you're like, oh, so that's why you think you have to do it this way. So let me show you why we don't. And so you'll go back and you'll draw another picture and say, so let's change this and let me show you why that's not why we do it that way. And sometimes when you communicate that way, even though it may seem very childish, you take that middle person out of the equation, and you both make more sense to each other. And so that worked very differently. Or if you can explain the chemistry of why it works differently, because chemical symbols work the same no matter what language, then that actually changes things too.
So it's really changed your approach to communication as well as negotiation, it seems.
It has. It's changed very much the way that I do things. It's also made me a much more patient teacher, because when you're explaining to someone who speaks another language or speaks English as a second language, you learn to teach much slower than you would normally teach if you were teaching someone that speaks has spoken English from birth, because you can't use slang, you can't use acronyms like we've gotten used to using for all sorts of things. So where we would use the acronym for NSH, you actually have to explain to them that that's the National Society for Histotechnology, and this is what we do. So you have to be very patient and explain every single thing. And it may take you much longer, but it also teaches you to use things like whiteboards and smart board and computer animation and all sorts of things that you wouldn't normally consider using.
Do you think you can overdo some of the tools?
It depends on the audience that you're working with.
So pretty much know your audience.
So you very much learn to assess your audience quickly.
Well, I'm definitely taking notes to make sure I can communicate more appropriately with my audience. What would you say are the top three tips for someone who's going to enter into any negotiation, whether it's buying a car or negotiating a new job with your boss, although you've been there for a while? What would you say are your top tips?
Make sure that you understand the person that you're negotiating with, or the group that you're negotiating with, so that you can ask good open-ended questions and gather information. And once you've gathered your information, make a plan for your negotiation. And once you've got a good plan for your negotiation, check and make sure, once you've gathered all of that information and put it into your plan, as you're presenting your plan, clarify that the person really understands that this is what I'm looking for. So whether it's something like what I do, where I'm putting together training plans and going to work with groups of people for training, and I'm clarifying for understanding of this is what I'd like us to get accomplished and this is the time frame that I'm looking at, or you're going to buy a car and you're going in and saying this is the price that I'm looking for and this is the reason that I'm looking for it. Make sure that they completely understand that you've done your homework based off of the questions that you asked, and this is what I am expecting to walk away with.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for your time and knowledge on the subject of negotiation. I think we've all learned a great deal, not only about what you do, but how you do what you do.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Anastasia. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Women in Histology, brought to you by the National Society for Histotechnology. Check out all of our podcasts by visiting the blog, or find us on iTunes. Search word, HistoTalks.